Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program, live from Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura, bringing you the social media news and comments on African stories.
Coming up, Ghanaians go to the polls to elect their new leader and members of parliament.
Well, driving here, I found the atmosphere quite calm, you know, and I hope it continues this way. Oh, it's been quite calm, peaceful looking, and I hope it continues this way.
I'm a Ghanaian, so I have to vote. Oh, I'm voting for progress, prosperity, peace, and unity.
Members of the UN Commission on Human Rights concluded their second field mission to South Sudan, but the situation remains dire.
South Sudan is in a difficult situation at the moment because the military confrontation between the government army, the SPLA, and the loose coalition of rebels is ongoing.
And we'll be reading some comments from voters in Ghana.
But before we get there, here's a chance to hear what's been happening around the world.
I'm Mark Caldwell with the DW News. The leaders of six major Western nations, including Germany and the United States, have called for an immediate ceasefire in the Syrian city of Aleppo and have condemned Russia and Iran for supporting the Syrian government. The six said a ceasefire was needed so the United Nations could bring humanitarian aid to East Aleppo. A Pakistan International Airlines flight carrying 47 people has crashed while en route to Islamabad from the northern city of Chitral. The airline has confirmed that flight PK-661 had lost contact with air traffic controllers on Wednesday afternoon. TV footage showed debris from the plane and a massive fire at the site of the crash. The government of Somalia's northern Puntland region has said it has retaken control of a small port town from jihadists who had declared allegiance to the Islamic State group. A regional governor said the armed militants had fled from the port of Quandala after heavy fighting, but his claim that dozens of jihadists had been killed could not be immediately verified. In Ghana, voters have been casting their ballots in parliamentary and presidential elections. President John Mahama of the National Democratic Congress is standing for re-election. He is being challenged by veteran politician Nana Akufo-Addo of the New Patriotic Party. Ghana was once hailed as a regional growth model, but had to go to the International Monetary Fund for a bailout in 2015. DW's Maxwell Souk is in northern Ghana.
Security was tight at all polling stations across the northern region as Ghanaians choose their next president and parliamentarians. There were few reports of difficulties in voting, and election monitors say polling was more peaceful than expected. Tensions rose in the regional capital, Tamale, earlier in the day when there were reports of voters attacking polling officials, but police were able to defuse the situation. Executive Secretary for the Peace Council for the Northern Region, Thaddeus Kusa, said such incidents were minor compared to previous elections.
This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. NATO Secretary-General Jens Stoltenberg has said that sanctions imposed on Russia over the Ukraine crisis must be kept in place to force Moscow to meet its Minsk commitments. He was speaking after NATO foreign ministers had held a meeting with their Ukrainian counterpart in Brussels.
The international community must keep pressuring Russia to respect its obligations, especially while the security situation in eastern Ukraine remains so serious. It is important that the economic sanctions be maintained.
The sanctions are now up for renewal amid doubts about their effectiveness and cost and concerns that US President-elect Donald Trump may take a softer line on Russia. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta is urging striking medical workers from public hospitals to return to work, saying nearly 20 people have died 3 days into the strike because of a lack of care. Kenyatta said the government was working to find a solution. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Mark Caldwell.
Welcome to the programme once again. Ghanaians voted Wednesday in tight presidential and parliamentary polls, seen as a test of stability for one of Africa's most secure democracies as it wrestles with a stumbling economy and corruption scandals. Once praised by US President Barack Obama for its peaceful transfers of power, Ghana has come under fire amid reports of voter intimidation and questions over the independence of its election agency. From Ghana, Isaac Kalechi sent this report.
I am at the Osu Cinema Hall 2 Center in Ghana's capital city, Accra, where voting is still taking place. Voters came out in record numbers to vote for a president and 275 members of parliament. The general concern for many at this center is very long queues.
The problem is the line is not going at all. You see, the policemen are not doing their work right. They have to look at it and know whether the line is going or not, because anybody can come and enter it.
I'm here from 8 o'clock. The process is very bad. It's not moving at all. And people are just patrolling inside and here and there. The queue is not moving.
The scene here is similar to what is taking place across the country in over 28,000 polling centers. The interest in this year's elections is significantly high, as some voters tell me.
Oh, I have to vote. Hey, I'm a Ghanaian, so I have to vote. I'm voting for progress, prosperity, peace, and unity. That is all I want.
There are two major candidates, and they have two different directions or two different agendas for the country. So I believe it's very critical for us to decide. Yeah, whichever way you think is good for the country, yeah, it's important to exercise your right in this exercise.
Over 15 million Ghanaians have registered to vote in this election. There are reports of delays at some polling stations due to late arrival of voting materials. But former president of Ghana, Jerry Rawlings, says the process has been smooth so far after casting his ballot.
Oh, driving here, I found the atmosphere quite calm, you know, and I hope it continues this way. Oh, it's been quite calm, peaceful looking, and I hope it continues this way.
There are several candidates vying for the presidency, but the two main front runners are incumbent President John Mahama and opposition leader Nana Akufo-Addo. Both have told local media they are satisfied with the conduct of the polls so far. Local election observers have also made similar assessment. Dr. Fred Digby is an observer with the Coalition of Domestic Election Observers Group.
It's okay. These are some of the teething things. People trying to find out, I voted here, but now it's a longer queue. That's the most that we have seen. We don't really think that even it's a problem. We're supposed to be free and fair and transparent.
Various social media platforms have played crucial roles in the election. Kwame Ahiagbenu is in charge of a social media tracking center in Accra. His project is backed by Deutsche Welle Academy. He talks about what his team of trackers do.
What we're doing here is that we're running the social media tracking center, which is giving us the ability to track content on social media based on certain keywords and sources, so that when there is some issue that we can red flag, we pass it on to the appropriate authorities.
For many Ghanaian voters, what is of importance is a peaceful outcome, no matter who emerges winner or loser. Voting started at 7 a.m. local time and is scheduled to end at 5 p.m. Counting will begin immediately after polls close. The Electoral Commission has said final results will be announced and a winner declared either on Thursday or latest Friday.
Isaac Kelechi reporting from Accra. Wanjiku, I know this is a topic that, you know, many people are commenting about.
Of course, we have Drew who says voting ends at 5 p.m. What are you waiting for? Baba Ghana Ibrahim is asking, what will the opposition do if it is elected as the new party in Ghana in terms of infrastructure, education and security?
Ibrahim, we shall wait for the results to know who the next president of Ghana will be. We shall get back to more of those comments. But first, let's go to Syria, where government forces now control all of Aleppo's historic old city after rebel fighters withdrew in the face of army advances overnight. On Wednesday, the rebels proposed a five-day ceasefire. At least 80,000 people have fled the city since the army began its operation in mid-November to recapture the rebel-held sector of the city. Abakar Jalo reports.
3 weeks into their operation to recapture East Aleppo, a rebel stronghold since 2012, the Syrian army and allied forces now control more than three quarters of it. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, a UK-based monitoring group, said the rebels had withdrawn from the last part of the old city overnight after neighboring districts were seized by the army. On Wednesday, several rebel factions proposed a five-day ceasefire so that the wounded, sick and other civilians could be evacuated. The offer made no mention of a rebel pullout from the city. Rapid gains by government forces have left the opposition fighters scrambling to defend a shrinking enclave they still control. Losing Aleppo would be the biggest blow yet to rebel forces in Syria's civil war, which began 5 years ago with protests calling for the ousting of President Bashar al-Assad. More than 300,000 people have died and millions have been forced from their homes in the meantime. On Tuesday, German Chancellor Angela Merkel lashed out at the international community's inability to stop the bloodshed in Aleppo. "It is a disgrace that we have been unable to establish humanitarian corridors," she told a party conference in the German city of Essen. She also condemned Russian and Iranian support for the government offensive. The Observatory for Human Rights said 341 people, including 44 children, had been killed in East Aleppo since the offensive began. Latest casualties include a Russian military advisor who died of his wounds sustained several days ago in rebel shelling of a government-controlled neighborhood.
Abubakar Jalo with that report. Members of the UN Commission on Human Rights concluded their second field mission in South Sudan that extended to Kenya and Ethiopia. The mission began on the 21st November to assess the human rights violations in the country. Also today, in a related development, the African Union's Special Envoy on Women held a press briefing to discuss high levels of sexual violence in the war-torn nation. Before we came on air, I spoke to Henrik Meihack, the country representative for the Friedrich Ebert Foundation in South Sudan, and he describes the human rights situation there.
South Sudan is in a difficult situation at the moment because the military confrontation between the government army, the SPLA, and the loose coalition of rebels is ongoing, and it's especially focusing on the southern region, the greater Equatoria region. In that region, we hear reports which are very difficult to verify of that offensive increasingly targeting villages where rebels are allegedly hiding. And while that is happening, we hear reports of civilians being harmed, large displacement.
And what measures do you suggest to improve the human rights situation in South Sudan?
The first measure that I think is important is to restart the peace process. We need a new approach that brings the many armed and non-armed actors that are relevant in South Sudan and have often been excluded from peace agreements in the past around the table to negotiate a way forward. Without such a political process, you can only treat symptoms of this conflict.
Henrik Meihack, the country representative for the Friedrich Ebert Foundation in South Sudan.
We'll dive straight into your comments on the ongoing Ghanaian elections, where we've been following the hashtag Ghana Decides.
And what is it all about? What are people saying?
Well, Fidelis Chalo from Kenya says, let's hope the Ghanaian election will go smoothly. And so far, we've had our correspondents telling us how it's going. Della Fatuyi Terence says, even when oil revenues aren't coming in, the NPP did a great job. So we'll see how they perform.
Indeed, Ghanaians remain hopeful that the next president will change things for the better, isn't it?
Yes, we do have some people that are a bit skeptical, though. Amisa Benjamin says, I am not voting because I'm disillusioned with Ghana politics. We have also people sharing how their experiences have been so far. And Elvis says, I just made my choice without any hassle. Go do the same in peace.
Yeah, and indeed, just like our correspondent said, in a few minutes, the polls will be closing. What more are they saying? Go ahead.
FO says, amazing attitude at my polling station. The elderly and pregnant women are quickly moved to a bench in front. Everyone is so nice. Of course, these are stories that we encourage to hear more about.
Yes, indeed, you can still comment on these stories and go to our Facebook page, just that. And in case you've just tuned in, you're listening to Africa Link straight from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host.
And I'm Wanjiko Mora from the social media desk.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, fishermen in Tanzania using the unconventional ways of catching fish.
It is just not worthwhile fishing the traditional way. So we decided to use dynamite instead.
And it is that day of the year when high school students in South Africa get their report cards. But how do they react after seeing their marks?
We'll be getting that in our social media second part. But first, let's go to Nigeria, where the government continues to intensify efforts to recover state funds looted by officials of the past administration. The looted funds amount to billions of dollars. On Tuesday, two high-profile corruption cases were heard in Nigerian courts. In another court session, former First Lady Patience Jonathan is seeking an order to unfreeze her bank account. The account was frozen following money laundering charges. There had been several high-profile corruption cases since President Buhari came to power last year. Sam Olukoya reports from Lagos.
One of the cases in court on Tuesday was that of former National Security Advisor Sambo Dansuki, who is facing charges of diverting millions of dollars of security funds. The second case is that of Supreme Court Justice Silvanus Uguta. He's standing trial for corruption, alleged money laundering, and breach of professional ethics. High-profile trials like this are a manifestation of the anti-corruption battle President Muhammadu Buhari is waging. Many like Wale Fatade, an anti-corruption campaigner, said the corruption fight has not achieved much because the president appeared to be alone in the fight.
I think our president now must have realized that he's an orphan. He's the only one fighting corruption. No other person is fighting corruption in this government. And so why one is not mystifying it or thinking our case is strange or worse than other countries, but I think our problem is we are not actively fighting it. There's corruption everywhere, but there are things we do that actively promote it. There are things we do that actively support it. So it is a huge issue. And we, in all facets of our lives, we can see corruption.
Okechukwu Nwaguma, who is concerned about the level of corruption in the country, has some advice for the president.
I think that there are people within government who are not, you know, with the president on this. People who are still, you know, part of the old system and who want to preserve the old system. And so the president needs to look within and identify these people who are sabotaging his anti-corruption efforts, isolate them, and make sure that they are out of the system if this anti-corruption crusade will be a success.
But some ordinary Nigerians like Oladapo Oluwole say the president is concentrating too much on corruption at the expense of the economy.
You said you are fighting corruption and people are suffering. People cannot afford to feed their children. Parents cannot afford to feed their children. Nobody, parents cannot afford to send their children to schools. And you're telling us you're fighting corruption. Focus on the economy. Let the economy get better.
The widespread corruption in Nigeria, in the face of a bad economy, highlights the challenges the country is facing.
Sam Olukoya reporting.
On the spot.
Cameroon has dispatched all ministers, politicians and lawmakers from the English-speaking northwest and southwest regions to return to their areas of origin and sensitize locals about peace and reconciliation as the Central African state faces one of its worst protests since the advent of multi-party politics in 1990. The violence has escalated, leading to the closure of all schools and markets, with the locals and military having running battles. As the government is calling for peace, the opposition says they should listen to the masses. The protesters are complaining of the overbearing influence of French in the bilingual country. Mark Kinzeka reports from Boa.
Supporters of John Frunze, Cameroon's main opposition leader, welcome him in Boya, regional capital of the southwest. Frunze and a host of senators had been previously prevented by supporters of the ruling CPDM party from entering the city. Frail from illness, this politician, who calls Boya his home, defied the supporters of the ruling party. When he finally managed to enter Boya, Frunze had this to say.
Do me a favor. Some of you have heard that I've not been well. But I said, if I'm dying, let me come and die in Boya. There is nothing under the sun that can block me from coming to Boya.
Frunze said he had come to Boya to support protesting teachers and lawyers and had urged the government to listen to them. Few days after his departure from Boya, English-speaking ministers and parliamentarians from the ruling party also arrived in Boya to call for peace. They organized rallies, but Boya residents refused to attend. Among those dispatched by President Paul Biya to calm the situation was Atanganji Paul, a minister in charge of special duties in the office of the president. In one of the rallies, Paul said the protesters should lodge their complaints with the right channel.
We have problems at all levels, and we have an administration. We have the government is in place. Lawyers, they have their grudges. You have the batonier, you have the bar council. I think any normal person, you have your problem, you go and tender your complaint to the minister. He will consult, and at the end of the day, he will bring you a solution. But what I don't agree is that you give a problem an ultimatum that it has to be solved this way and during this period of time. I think that is a very wrong approach.
Lawyers, teachers and university students had called for the uprising to protest against what they called the overbearing influence of French over the English-speaking side of bilingual Cameroon. The military stepped in to disperse the protesters, but failed, and what was once peaceful protest became violent and deadly. Reverend Pastor Anyambot Emmanuel of the Presbyterian Church is urging the government to consider the protesters' demands.
Do we need to spray people with water? Who came to ask for something before we did the same thing? Who is administering the common law in the English-speaking part of the country? Somebody who has not studied that law, who doesn't know it, and is executing a language which the people themselves don't understand. When we go now to secondary schools in the English-speaking part of the country, and you send teachers who don't speak English to teach our children in a language which we don't even know how to call it, what are you doing? You are under-educating these children not to become competitive in the world. Why can't we get to the table of dialogue?
In a press release issued on November 28 about the strike action in the English-speaking regions of Cameroon, the United States expressed concerns over the repression of demonstrators and human rights abuses by the military. The U.S. ambassador to Cameroon, Michael Hoza, met with Cameroon's president, Paul Biya, and explained his country's position.
It is the American government's position that Cameroon has great strength in diversity. Cameroon has a wonderful history of tolerance, and both President Biya and I agree that dialogue is the future for Cameroon. We know that there will be discussions, and we are certain that the Cameroonian people will find a solution and be able to live together in tolerance as they have for many, many years.
One of the demands of the protesting lawyers is a return of the federal government, a political system that Cameroon had practiced up to 1972 when a referendum scrapped it in favor of a unitary system. But the government of Cameroon has clearly said it cannot grant that wish. In Boya and in other English-speaking regions of Cameroon, Residents have refused to sing the national anthem. They have chosen to call it foreign until the government meets their demands.
Moki Kinzeka reporting from Boya.
Living Planet Africa.
Now, the coral reefs of Tanzania are an idyllic holiday destination, but they have a sinister side as well. Fishermen who catch fish by stunning them with dynamite set off as many as 50 underwater explosions a day. This destroys the natural habitat and indirectly threatens the livelihood of more than a million people. In most of East Africa, dynamite fishing has been stopped, but not in Tanzania. This report by Julia Ambaga is read now by Loveday Wright.
Along the coast, just south of Dar es Salaam, a row of some 50 stone-built houses is nestled under the palm trees. This is where Murari Musa grew up. The fisherman only has one finger on his left hand. He lost the rest in an accident while fishing with dynamite. He tossed an explosive charge into the water too late. He explains why he wasn't fishing with a rod or a net.
It is just not worthwhile fishing the traditional way, so we decided to use dynamite instead.
An explosive device held into the coral reef, densely populated with marine life, will kill as many as 100 fish. The underwater shockwaves puncture the air bladders in all living creatures within a radius of between 5 and 20 metres, depending on the size of the charge. The stunned creatures sink to the seabed, which is where the fishermen collect them. But Musa no longer fishes with dynamite. He now works as a cook and has resolved to help protect the reef near his home and its marine life.
I stopped fishing with dynamite when I heard how much damage it does to the reef and the natural world generally. And I also had an accident when fishing, which made me even more determined to give it up.
Musa now keeps a record for a conservation group, the World Wildlife Fund, of how many fish local fishermen catch and how. Tanzania wants to become Africa's top mining nation. That explains why there's so much dynamite around. It's used for blasting in the mines. Through criminal elements, some of it also ends up in the hands of fishermen. Marcel Croese works for the Smart Fish Programme, a project funded by the European Union to encourage sustainable fishing. He's familiar with the problem of dynamite fishing and why it's still prevalent in Tanzania, but not elsewhere in East Africa.
Dynamite fishing used to be in Kenya as well. They implemented a terrorism legislation that provided mandatory sentencing for the possession of dynamite. Unfortunately, Tanzania has not followed that route yet, although I know they're looking at it.
In Tanzania, mining laws dating as far back as the 1960s are still in force. The illegal trade in dynamite is punishable by a fine of the equivalent of just €2 and 50 cents. But the legislation is now being overhauled. As one researcher recently counted 300 underwater explosions in just a month, some would say the move is certainly overdue. The Tanzanian government has responded by appointing members of the security forces to a multi-agency task force.
A report by Julia Ambaga. The National Certificate, or NCS, is a high school diploma and is the main school leaving certificate in South Africa. This is a transitional stage for many young adults and comes with various challenges, the first being receiving the results. Wanjiku, you've been following what people are saying, you know.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, people took to Twitter as results for final year students were released. And the messages were a mixture of encouragement for the ex-candidates as they wait to join university and bittersweet memories for those that have been in that same position.
And what are they saying?
Sibongile Ntuli says, there's nothing depressing like failing one subject, which is your home language, this is African, and passing the rest with flying colours. Tando Radebe is reminding parents, saying, please don't compare your child to another child thinking that it will make them work harder. It just makes it worse. Bekani says, dear black parents, stop putting unnecessary pressure on your kids. Even if they didn't do well, appreciate and show support.
But I'm sure there's some kids, you know, expecting praises after, of course, performing well, isn't it?
Well, weren't you always promised?
Yeah, sure indeed, yeah.
Gifts after performing. And Maureen actually agrees with you and says your grandparents promised to slaughter a goat if you pass. The whole family depends on you for festivity season.
Yeah, and of course, as Christmas gets closer, families are making plans to slaughter those goats.
Of course. But on a more somber note, Benny Boy says, guys, even if you fail, please don't commit suicide. Failing means you have another chance to try harder.
I'm afraid we have to leave it at that. A quick reminder of our main story. Ghanaians voted Wednesday in tight presidential and parliamentary polls, seen as a test of stability for one of Africa's most secure democracies. There we come to the end of the program. For more news, visit dw.com/Africa.
Or follow us on DW Africa Facebook page.
I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And Wanjiko Mwaura.
It's goodbye and take care.